The Tom Woods Show, episode 1876.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am joined today by Jeff Perry and Logan Davies of Voluntarism in Action, which you can visit at viaction.org. And the idea here is that they're going to do and help facilitate good works for people who are in need, but these good works will be done without coercion. The people doing the helping will be doing so voluntarily, and this is obviously meant to be a challenge to the welfare state model that we're so familiar with. So here is an example of libertarians taking their ideas and actually trying to put them into practice even before we're at a minimal state or no state position. So let's get the conversation going. All right, first of all, would you mind if the both of you gave me a little bit of your background? I mean, I hate to ask, but I'm a little bit curious about even things like how old you are and stuff like that. I mean, whatever you feel comfortable disclosing.
Sure. Logan Davies, I'm a senior underwriter for one of the largest mortgage companies in the country. By day and nighttime, I dedicate most of my time to family and the inner workings of the nonprofit.
All right.
And I am Jeff Perry. I'm 30-ish, and I'm actually a dietitian. So I work in a hospital by day, and at night, I'm the publishing manager for Voluntarism in Action.
How long have you guys had this?
We started, I'd say, around 2017. But when we just started, we were just kind of like sharing GoFundMes and whatnot on our social media outlets. And then by 2018, we started off as like a small side project on a Facebook page called Being Libertarian.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I know those guys.
Yeah. And then we kept getting comments filled with, because a lot of our posts would say that, hey, charity can replace the welfare state and whatnot. We don't need massive tax burdens to alleviate the burdens of society. So we kind of wanted to put our money where our mouth was. We created this little side project, just shared GoFundMes and whatnot. And then they made me the project manager about early 2018. And I just decided to do a full send and incorporate us as a 501c3. And we just took off from there.
There is the $5 Liberty Memes Club where, in effect, they really do share GoFundMes. Mm-hmm. And that actually has, believe it or not, worked pretty well for them. So what is the way you guys proceed?
So that's how we did it originally. We actually teamed up with Liberty Memes on a few occasions to enact charitable efforts. But so what we do now is to make a larger impact instead of helping like one individual family. We created a few programs. And so as the donations come in, we kind of made it a little more organized. I've set teams on each program, and then they find fundraisers to make a bigger impact and get a lot more larger people involved and assisted.
So give me some examples of exactly the kind of help you guys give.
Okay. So our main programs is urgent needs. That's like any event happens, like this past year during the COVID lockdowns, the unforeseen effects of it caused massive unemployment. A lot of people went hungry. Everybody saw the news with thousands of people lined up at food banks. So what we did was we created these online forms and we allowed families to fill them out. And then we would in turn send them gift cards to go grocery shopping. Also in regards to that, we assisted families who's kind of relied on public assistance in the lunch schools, the schools at lunch. So we actually sent families with monies who had dependents for the lower income families. Just about any time this urgent need comes up, we assist in that aspect. We have a community development program that is to try to build self-sufficiency instead of relying on the welfare state. Today, we are actually launching a vegetable gardening project where we'll be sending families non-GMO organic seeds, and they can teach the children how to grow. A few more. We have an education program. We are big proponents of homeschooling and unschooling. Jeff can probably go into more detail about that because him and his wife actually run that program. And my favorite program we have is our Sierra Leone humanitarian relief, where we use cryptocurrencies to send it to our contacts in Africa, and they in turn efficiently are able to assist their own villages.
So if I'm a donor, can I pick which one of these programs my money goes to?
Yes. Mm-hmm. each program has their own fund.
All right, Jeff, let's talk about the schooling aspect. How does this help people?
Well, it was actually kind of providential, Tom, because we thought of this before all of the COVID nonsense started with them shutting down schools and essentially forcing almost everyone to start doing homeschool. But we thought, you know, the state is always taking money from people to run their schools where they teach people what they want to know. And it disincentivizes homeschool and parents teaching their children what they think they should know. So we wanted to kind of remove that disincentive by providing some of the financial means that might otherwise be lacking. And so we started up the education initiative. And the more we went on, the more we realized that it wasn't just the financial aspect, but people don't know how to teach their own children because they're so conditioned that that's something that the state has to do via its appointed teachers. And so a lot of it, in addition to getting that financial assistance, has just been teaching people how to teach and pointing them to resources that they can use on their own to help their children learn. So it's been really interesting, kind of eye-opening in that way.
Now, I'm trying to think of how this works practically speaking, because with the Liberty Memes people, I would see the different things that they're funding in my feed because I would be part of their Facebook group. But if you're not operating that way, where they would have a GoFundMe for this and a GoFundMe for that, but if you're not operating that way, do I have to visit your website regularly? That because I could forget to do that. How do you make sure that the need is constantly before people's eyes?
Social media has been huge. Now, that's one of the principal ways that we operate. I mean, we're on Facebook and Twitter, of course, but also Float and MeWe and Instagram. Just everywhere we can be, we try to be there, not only to try to let people know about the charity initiatives we have, but also to share the message of voluntarism and liberty that our organization shares. So through that way, whenever we can, you know, we ask people when we help them, you know, hey, can you send us some pictures that we can share with people so they can know how their donations are being used? And sometimes people say no, especially when it's the education stuff, because it's their kids, and I understand that. But a fair number of people do, and we share those on social media and let people know, hey, this is what your money is going to. Thank you so much. You're really helping people.
Yeah, I love that feature. And of course, that's one of the things that technology these days makes possible. Because in the past, of course, you donate to something and you don't really know what happens. But now you can make a real connection with people. Now, it seems to me that since you guys are both balancing full-time careers, that, you know, this is a genuine sacrifice on your part to be working on this project. And I'd like to say that you might feel like you could use maybe some extra help. And the problem that I've seen with nonprofits is that when they say things like we could use some volunteers, I guess it's just part of human nature. Volunteers are very unreliable because they feel like, well, you know, I'm not getting paid anything, so they're lucky if I show up at all. And so it becomes more of a nightmare to deal with them than the benefits you get from the volunteer work. Now, am I wrong about that?
No, you are 100% correct. We have a significant turnover rate with our volunteers. Occasionally, we catch good ones. Like when we first started, we put out some volunteer forms, and Sarah, Jeff's wife, she was a great one. She brought Jeff on. And every now and then, I'd say like one out of every 10 new volunteer actually sticks around. So that is very difficult and tiresome. And it's always a shifting of responsibilities. Like one moment, oh, I'm relieved. I don't have to do this anymore. And then the person goes AWOL and back to doing it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's rough. Because I was about to say, hey, folks, if this appeals to you morally, you should get out there and help. And I think, is that more of a curse or a blessing to you? I don't know. I mean, I would hope that there would be a higher caliber of person listening to the Tom Woods Show. One would hope.
Yes. That's one reason why we're glad to be here.
Yeah, there you go.
It all depends on how we can tie that person's individual skills and their likes to the cause of liberty and charity. For example, we've got some great people who came on because they like making memes. And that's one of the big ways that we kind of spread our messages through memes. So we've got a couple of people who are just continuously pumping out these amazing memes about how the state can't do things right, about how private action is so much better. And we get a lot of attention, a lot of traction on social media from those memes. And it was an easy way to tie what they liked into what we've wanted to do. And it was similar with Sarah. She is great with English and writing. And so bringing her on board, it was easy to help with grammar and editing. And me, I like writing. So I write a lot of the stuff that we have on our philosophy page, our news page, and manage that. So it's all about leveraging people's talents. And you're right, they do have to have that pre-existing interest in liberty and in charity. But if they've got that, yeah, I'd love to get help.
Well, suppose you came across somebody who admired what you were doing, but said, this is a duplication of effort. I mean, what we need to do is just expand existing state programs to cover the people who have fallen between the cracks that you've identified. But we already have the state doing this, and the state has a lot more resources than you do, and they can compel people to donate or do this or that thing. So what's so important about excluding the state from charity? So how would you answer that?
I guess in two manners is what I usually do. One, they do it extremely inefficiently. We see that, I believe, for every, I forgot where the port came from, but for every $1 you do donate as in through forced tax, 70% goes to administration costs, 30% goes toward actually helping people. And it's the exact opposite for the majority of nonprofits. So the inefficiency issue was brought up in two, it's just straight up immoral. You are forcing people to pay for things they don't necessarily want to, forcing the vegan to subsidize slaughterhouses, forcing the non-smoker to supply the tobacco industry, forcing pacifists to fund wars. That goes along with the charitable aspect, which is not so charitable.
That's true. And one of the reasons we're called voluntarism in action, as opposed to libertarian charities or something like that, is that we believe that the only moral interactions between humans are ones that they voluntarily choose to participate in. And it goes back to one of the first proponents of voluntarism. His name was Albaron Herbert. And he lived in the 1800s, so kind of almost a proto-Rothbardian, because he deduced that each person owns themselves. They are able to choose their own actions through individual will. And therefore, any force used to compel another individual to do something that is not according to their will is immoral. And he even proposed what he called a voluntary state with voluntary taxation, which in Rothbardian language is a contradiction in terms. But what he meant was that the functions of government should be voluntarily funded, because if they are not, if taxation is compulsory, then it's automatically immoral, because you're overriding another person's free will to do what you assume is best. And in order to do that, you have to force them. You have to use coercion. And that nullifies any good that you might hope to obtain.
Well, he was so much a proto-Rothbardian that Rothbard used a version of his name as a pen name several times. Aubrey Herbert was his pen name. Yeah, taken from the person you mentioned. Okay, so these are standard libertarian responses. I agree with them completely. Mm-hmm. I can still imagine people saying, you can do a little bit of good, but there's no way there'll ever be enough for, you know, there'll ever be quite enough resources to solve all problems if they're dealt with voluntarily. And secondly, coercion is not the worst evil in the world. That they would just say libertarians have arbitrarily assigned coercion to be the worst moral evil. But there are worse moral evils, neglect of the poor, for example. You know, so there are ready responses to some of this stuff. And I realize that at this, you know, you're not primarily running a debating society. You want to show that our ideas can have real, very favorable consequences in the real world. It's true. And I think maybe the best way of persuading people is by actually just getting out there and doing. You can argue with people about it, but just getting out there and doing things, providing voluntary solutions. Like I know out in California, one of the local LP chapters cleaned up a beach, and they do work like this sometimes at the Free State Project or various examples like this. Like there's a disaster relief program that Brent DeRitter is part of that helps people when natural disasters occur, and but helps them voluntarily. Mm-hmm. I personally think this is the probably the most effective course of action we have, because we can argue against the welfare state all day long, but I think people who really are convinced by it are not going to be persuaded by our arguments.
Yeah, that's what we've noticed as well. It's a big reason why we took the leap to actually put our money where our mouth was, because I'd go back and forth with people all day back when I would do, you know, stuck on Facebook for endless hours at nighttime, just trying to convince these people else otherwise. But I realized until I actually did the actions and showed physical proof that it can be accomplished without coercion, there's no convincing. And to some, there still is no convincing. You can drop all the evidence you want, all the data, but they are pretty embedded with the state.
Yeah. And that's a problem that's inherent in, I think, in all of libertarian and liberty philosophy, is just that the state has so much prior ground where they've convinced so many people. But I think Logan's right, actually getting out there and doing things is what makes the difference. Of course, the classic thing against libertarians is, oh, you're just selfish. That's why you don't want to pay taxes. And a lot of people on Twitter, they get into, of course, ridiculous arguments, and that always gets brought up. And then they say, no, we've got ACT voluntarily over here. We donate to them. And voluntarism in action is out there doing the work. And so there's that ability to contradict some of the common misconceptions about liberty philosophy and libertarianism.
Hey, everybody, let me just get a word in here to thank our sponsor, Merck Research. I am sure many of you are tired of hearing there's going to be a stock market crash just around the corner every day for the last 10 years. Well, our friends over at Merck Research provide unbiased monthly analysis on the economy and stock market. And through a consistent set of easy-to-read charts and frameworks with written analysis, these monthly reports provide an intellectually consistent view on the market and economy. You can download the PDF chart books with analysis or watch the video voiceover walkthrough. Their goal is to help you better understand what's really going on and ultimately to help you make better investment decisions. Almost all financial media, like all media, has become fear-mongering clickbait. And if you're tired of the nonstop and inaccurate doom and gloom and want an objective and insightful summary of what's going on in the market and economy, go over to tomwoods.com/research for a no-risk 3-month free trial. And it's only $20 a month after that. So for your no-risk 3-month free trial, check it out at tomwoods.com/research. I'm looking at the homepage at viaction.org. What is the GuideStar Gold Seal of Transparency, and how do you get that?
Those are governing organizations that are voluntary as well, who kind of oversee and make sure that nonprofits that function do so morally. In other words, the executive director isn't pocketing 70% of the money in one way or another. So we fill out a bunch of information, we provide financial documents and whatnot, and then they do a little judge and they score you off of how transparent you are with your donors. And that's how you receive it. We're fairly transparent. We do post our financials. We are a smaller organization, so wouldn't be laundering millions of dollars regardless. But yeah.
So somebody listening to this who's interested in what you're doing and supports you morally and wants to support financially could show up and make a donation. Is there anything further you'd like them to do that could help?
Preferably step up in your own community, for one. As I've been told before, taking a single can to your local food bank is way more monumental and more personal than advocating raising taxes. You're making a direct difference.
Tell me what else about the work you guys are doing that I've left out that you urgently want to tell people about.
I would say look us up on social media and follow us. Try to share our posts, because one of the, like you mentioned, Tom, one of the big roadblocks to this isn't that people don't think other people should be helped. It's that people think that the state is already doing just fine. And that's not the case, but they assume it is. So the more people we can get to realize that that is, in fact, not the case, that the state is not doing a particularly good job of helping people, and that it's not going about it in a particularly moral way. The more people we can get to realize that, the more help we can get, not just on our end, but to the liberty movement and to voluntary charity in general, because it's kind of like the centralization of any other industry, if you can think of charity as an industry. When the government starts to centrally plan things, which is essentially what state welfare is, it's centrally planned charity. Things always get inefficient and they always get more expensive. You always get less of an output. But if you have, you can say, a free market among charities, then people are going to eventually put their money at the most efficient charities. And hopefully we're one of those. But if people look around and they see another place they want to voluntarily donate to, well, then that's still meeting our ethical goal of getting people to help voluntarily.
There are a lot of arguments we could make, and I've got episodes, maybe I'll try and put them on the show notes page, about the problems with the welfare state and how they can actually make things worse for people in some ways by getting them trapped in a mentality that's going to keep them exactly where they are year after year. There are a lot of incentive problems, on and on and on. And so Charles Murray did some great work about this in his book, Losing Ground. So I'll try and put that stuff up at tomwoods.com/1876. But I also want to urge people just to go directly to your website. So it's viaction.org. So voluntarismination.org. And I want people to check that out because here you guys are, as you say, you're putting your money where your mouth is. You're putting your time and effort where your mouth is. And you're making the libertarian world look good. And you're making everybody out here proud. And we want to see more of this. So if my folks can add to that, I would be delighted. So do you gentlemen have any parting words before we wrap up for today?
I just have one other thought that came to me is that you mentioned we both have other jobs and we both have families. So we're in this kind of not to make money, but to help other people. And one of the big drawbacks of the state welfare is that they are in it to make money. One of my favorite books, The God of the Machine by Isabel Patterson, she makes the point that the person who has philanthropy as their job, they need people to always be in want. So there will always be dependent people so that the professional philanthropist can always have a job. And that's something that we just don't have because we have jobs and we have families. We want to help other people have happy lives, have their own jobs and their own families.
Well, I think there's a lot to that. And in fact, there's a guy named James Payne, who wrote a book, P-A-Y-N-E, wrote a book called Overcoming Welfare. And he quotes people who either work in or at one time worked in the various welfare bureaucracies. And a common theme is the idea that the more people we get on the rolls, the better. Because we build a little empire, we can demand more money next year. It's not how many people we get off the rolls. It's not the success stories of, look, this person went out and started his own business, or this person is now making $60,000 a year, and this person is now independent and proud. It's how many people are on the rolls. That is the way they think.
Yeah, and we see that in almost every government agency. It starts to exist for its own sake and not for the sake of the people they're allegedly trying to help.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it perpetuates itself, and yeah, it exists for the sake of existing and for the sake of lobbying for more money to continue existing. And that's the inertia that also follows from all this. Well, again, the website viaction.org, I want people to go check it out. It's a nice site. It's pithy, and I think it makes a very compelling case. So first of all, thank you for what you're doing and continued good luck with it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for today. Our old friend John Bush returns tomorrow, and then Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, one of the great Barrington Declaration authors, will be on the program the following day. So I look forward to your questions. I'm going to be soliciting questions for Dr. Bhattacharya. By the time you're hearing this, it'll be too late, but I'm soliciting questions for Dr. Bhattacharya inside the supporting listeners group, the Tom Woods Show Elite, And I do that from time to time. I will occasionally ask people, what would you like me to ask the guest? So if that interests you, that's one of the benefits over at supportinglisteners.com. So go check that out. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.